Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 13th of February. The basic idea of harnessing hydrogen for energy is not a new one. It was used, I guess, as early as 1794 to float reconnaissance balloons during the French Revolution. 20th century British scientists proposed using electricity from windmills to electrolyze water when the wind spun out surplus power. We're going to be talking about hydrogen, which is much discussed these days, and we're going to look at it in terms of how hydrogen cars particularly could be used to address global warming. Is this a technology that can be with us very shortly? What infrastructure would be required to harness hydrogen, to store hydrogen? Is it the kind of alternative to oil that we can look at right now, or is it, as one person has suggested, something that we would be looking at after the year 2030? Hydrogen's long-term potential. The president, as you know, announced a $1.2 billion research initiative in his State of the Union address for hydrogen. And we will be talking with two guests this hour about this issue and welcoming your phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And we will get, I can assure you, plenty of calls on this. There's a great deal of interest in alternative energy among those of you who are listening. Bob Shildon is our guest, first half hour, environmental advice columnist for Sierra Club magazine. Bob, thank you very much for being with us. Hello, Bob.
Yeah.
There we go. Hey, Bob, thanks for being with us. Tell me, I read somewhere and it sort of stuck in my mind that maybe we're looking at, after the year 2030, hydrogen working for us, but not for a long period of time, that we need that much research, that much infrastructure built, storage facilities, et cetera. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely, if ever.
If ever?
Yeah.
Ooh.
I'm not sure it's the best method of fighting global warming or conserving energy, but assuming that it turns out to be worth doing, yes, because it's, of course, as you know, a very explosive gas.
Yeah.
It requires a whole different kind of pipeline structure than we now use for oil or for natural gas.
Huh.
And so pipelines cost well over $1 million. I think it's gone up now, but they're very expensive to build, $1 million a mile. And so you can see that
to
replace this network of the whole shipping network, whether it's trucks that carry gas, because hydrogen is also a very thin gas, you have to have much tighter seals and everything or it leaks out. And of course, it's harder to pump because it's lighter in weight. And so to pump it through a pipeline requires about 15% of the energy that you originally have in it. So there's a lot of technological obstacles to creating that infrastructure, and that is certainly one of them. Just the nature of the hydrogen gas itself is such that it's very difficult to transport it in the same way as we transport natural gas or oil.
Why is it that the president announced this huge research initiative? Why is that this is what we're hearing more than any other electric cars, et cetera?
Well, I have my suspicions.
Well, go ahead. Let's hear them.
Well, because the way you produce hydrogen is to electrolyze water, and that requires a vast amount of electricity, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we got totally sold on hydrogen, that would open the way for building nuclear plants.
Oh.
Because the nuclear plant does not release carbon dioxide. And so you would then could then build a case for building more nuclear plants. That's kind of what I suspect.
Hmm.
But I'm not, I'm just throwing that out there. I don't know what his motives were, but that certainly is a possibility. And I think you have to look at who is benefiting from the research, too. I don't know that, but, sometimes research dollars are distributed to chosen people, people that are allies with a certain political party or leader. So you have to look into the motives of why that kind of money would be invested.
Mm-hmm. It would be a huge expenditure of money, wouldn't it? You'd need to, instead of having fuel in your car with gas, you need a whole new system for...
Absolutely, a whole new system.
Whole new thing.
You have to, first of all, have a system to create the energy, the hydrogen, and then you have to have a system to distribute the hydrogen.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of energy losses along the way in creating it from electric power. You lose right off the top 25 to 30% of the electrical power you had just to make the hydrogen.
Hmm.
And so to my mind, it makes more sense just to pump that electricity into the grid and go with battery power or other more energy conservation measures, of course, too. So, it would require a tremendous amount of technology and infrastructure to get it up and running.
So when you look at something that might be available sooner and would be pollution-free and would help take care of this global warming issue, we don't, it seems to me, have until 2030 to take this on. Where do you think all the research money should be going?
I'm not saying that we shouldn't do any hydrogen research. I think we should. But for the time being, the much more short-term pollution-free solutions are generating our electricity through wind and through solar. And to me, the biggest one in short-term, the lowest-hanging fruit, is simply not using as much energy.
Mm.
You know, getting the Congress to pass a fuel economy measure that would demand 50 miles to the gallon in our cars would be a huge step forward.
Mm-hmm.
A few million miles of weather stripping would probably save a lot of energy immediately. So I think I would put if I were the emperor, I would put my money in conservation of energy and devices that make everything much, much more efficient. And then research into improved technology for other forms of generation. That's kind of where I would put the emphasis, rather than on hydrogen.
And do you see any signs that that's happening now, Bob?
Well, there's a tremendous amount of research going on in these areas.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's going to be a push at some point to get Congress off its duff and pass a stricter fuel economy measure. The fuel economy measure that was passed in the 70s doubled the efficiency of our cars from about 13 miles to the gallon to around 26, 27, somewhere in there. I forget the exact number. Now we have the Prius that gets 55 miles to the gallon on the road. Total, you know, average economy. So right there you have a huge savings just in mandating more efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes for every appliance. There was a big fight because of air conditioners. You know, they can be made more efficient, but sometimes industry isn't willing to do that unless you sort of hold a stick over them. And so there's many, many areas like that where, and I think education too. I put a lot of money into education because people will conserve if they understand how to do it and why to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's a pretty cheap method right there. When there was an energy shortage in California a couple years ago, they actually managed just with what I thought was a fairly weak education program, they reduced the energy consumption by 10%. Well, that's a lot, just mm-hmm. by telling people to conserve, you know, to do this, turn your air conditioner down, turn your heat down, and things like that. I think those are the more immediate measures that should be taken right away.
How hard would it be to get the car manufacturers to give us 60 miles a gallon or 70 miles a gallon?
Well, I don't know. They, of course, took a big hit in the 70s because they didn't have an efficient car. The way their mind works puzzles me immensely. They didn't have an efficient car. They took a beating in the 70s. You remember Chrysler had to be bailed out by the government.
Mm-hmm.
Then they turn around and start making gigantic SUVs that get terrible mileage.
Right, yeah, they should have.
Making a fortune off of them.
Yeah.
Not putting out the research and development dollars that you need to develop an efficient car like the hybrids or like just better gas engines like the Corolla. I just drove a Corolla. I got 42 miles to the gallon on the highway.
Mm.
You know, they refused to do that, and now they're on the verge of bankruptcy. Some of them, it looks
mm-hmm,
like,
mm-hmm.
You know, and it's hurting. It's hurting people. It's hurting all the people that work in the auto industry. Thousands and thousands of people laid off because the auto industry took the quick money on the SUV. Now they're stuck. Now we have another energy crunch, and they're stuck with these gigantic monsters that get a fifth of the mileage sometimes of a good, efficient hybrid car.
Yeah, and a lot of people are still driving those big guys. You can see them on the road.
I know.
Yeah.
It boggles my mind, but how can we get them to? I think if they don't, they're doomed. And if I were an executive in that industry, I would say, my God, man, you know, we have this energy thing, and we've got to do something now, or we're going to be blown out of the market.
Right.
You know, and what is the Sierra Club did a survey of auto workers, and the auto some years ago, maybe 10 years ago, the auto workers said, we need to develop an efficient car. I mean, they at a higher percentage than the general population, people that actually worked in the car industry, the guys on the assembly line, knew that and said that we need to make a more efficient car, because they had been the ones that were most burned in the 70s, when Detroit didn't have an efficient car. And so you got to wonder, well, do these people really care about this industry? I don't know. Yeah. About the industry they're running, the higher-ups. I don't know.
We're going to welcome phone calls, and we'll take them in just a moment. Bob Shilgin is with us right now. He's environmental advice columnist for Sierra Club magazine. Later this hour, we will speak with the director of technology and program development at the National Hydrogen Association in Washington, D.C., as we look at alternatives to gasoline becoming freer from oil. Hydrogen is being highly touted, and we're talking about why. Our guest this first half hour somewhat skeptical about the whole technology. What do you think? 800-486-8655, and we start our calls with John from Milwaukee. Hi, John.
Hi. One of the real values of hydrogen is actually as a currency, in the sense that It's a form of storing energy, and we can create energy from many, many different sources. You can create hydrogen through electrolysis. You can extract hydrogen from oil. You can use hydrogen in have a system where we could be harvesting energy in remote areas. If you think of what's the cheapest way to make energy or electricity today, it's hydroelectric. But hydroelectric, you have to have relatively close to a metropolitan area that can consume the electricity that's generated by the hydroelectric. Now, if you have hydrogen as a currency, it will allow you to harvest very, very remote areas. You could go to Japan or Canada or Argentina or all sorts of remote areas and harvest hydroelectric or wind power, where you can take that energy, and even though you're not close to a metropolitan area, you can create energy and ship that energy out. And it's a clean energy, and we don't necessarily have to have fuel cells. BMW has an internal combustion engine that runs off hydrogen, and we can be creating the infrastructure that's needed for hydrogen today.
But, you know, I agree. Hydrogen is a way of storing power at exit when you're at excess capacity. Absolutely, that's one of the original ideas about it. However, why store it that way instead of just storing it in a battery somewhere? Why not just pump it straight into the power grid and let it go into a battery if you want to store it?
That's where
it doesn't make sense to me.
You lose energy with batteries. Batteries have
batteries are about 85% efficient.
But the other thing you can do is when you do electrolysis, another thing that nobody talks about is you could do electrolysis in the home. And then that energy is not wasted, in the sense that the energy that you're talking about that is wasted when you do electrolysis is heat. And I can heat my home with that energy, so that energy would not be wasted. So I could have a fuel cell. And the other thing, too, is you don't necessarily...
But where is your electricity going to come from in the first place?
Oh, yeah, in that sense. But yeah. I'm talking about some of the lost energy that you're talking about can be used as heat if you have distributed electrolysis where you can use the wasted heat. Right now, the power plants are only about 40% efficient. And when you have a power plant, they generally are located near bodies of water because they dump all the waste heat. So there's tremendous amounts of waste heat that are done that way, too. The other thing I was going to mention, though, is Japan is actually doing this. I just read recently that Japan is financing windmills that are going to be put in South America, and they will use those windmills up in the mountains to generate hydrogen, and they'll ship that hydrogen back to Japan and use it in Japan. Another thing with fuel cells that nobody talks about is solid oxide fuel cells. These fuel cells generate hydrogen internally, but they actually burn
diesel fuel, they can burn gas. That's very far in the future, I think, that technology. I'm not saying that it's impossible. I'm saying that in the short term, and we need to act very quickly in the short term, there are far more effective things than hydrogen. That doesn't mean that as I said before, that doesn't mean we shouldn't be researching in hydrogen, but I think we need to very quickly catch the low-hanging fruits if we really think that global warming is a problem. That doesn't mean we shouldn't do anything with hydrogen, of course, but it's a question of prioritizing the research at this point in time.
Yeah, we got to pause for a moment. We'll return. Thanks very much for your call, John. I guess the first half hour is Bob Shulgin. He is the environmental advice columnist for Sierra Club magazine. We're talking about hydrogen. Is it the answer to cutting us from our reliance on oil? And we have one line. No, we don't. 800-486-8655. Keep trying. You'll get through eventually. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow during this time period, it's Valentine's Day. We will speak with a very interesting young man, Christopher Phillips, who's author now of Socrates in Love. He started these, you know, Socrates cafes all over the world in all kinds of places. This new book looks at the kind of love that makes life worthwhile. It looks at love of family. It looks at love of strangers, love between friends, selfless love, love of neighbor, love of country, love of God, love of life, love of wisdom, et cetera, et cetera. The book goes from New Orleans at Mardi Gras and the gambling dens of Las Vegas to Billy Graham's last evangelical revival. Christopher talks with moms and dads about parent love, with inmates of a maximum security prison about unconditional love, with Hurricane Katrina refugees, with a family who took them in, with religious people all over the world. It'll be a great conversation, I'm sure. Socrates in Love is the new book. All right, back to some phone calls for Bob. Let's go to Frank from Madison next. Hi, Frank.
Hi.
This
is a great guest, and he's very right. The immediate response would be energy efficiency. And I would like to point out that the hydrogen economy was suggested during the energy crisis in a very famous article in the journal Science in 1976. And it would have been a good long-term option to shift then, you know, when the geopolitics and the economics, were very obvious. And it's interesting that, you know, it was an option that wasn't followed, and that it is suggested now as an option is basically that it's something that's in the future, that one doesn't have to take those immediate steps if this fine option is going to be available tomorrow. And since I've become cynical, I think that that's one of the reasons why it's being emphasized by this administration. But you know, the technologies for much more efficient use of energy exist already. For instance, you know, there are cars that give you 70 to 90 kilometers per liter already. And they're just not marketed heavily, certainly not in North America.
Bob?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, and by cutting the weight of the car, every 10% you cut in the weight, you gain 8% in efficiency. So if we just had lighter, smaller cars, I've read figures up to 100 miles to the gallon.
Goodness.
And also, you know, I think we talk a lot about cars, but remember, around 35% of our energy is consumed in the home. And, if we just put in some fluorescent light bulbs, I calculated we'd save 5 billion gallons, the equivalent of 5 billion gallons of oil a year.
Oh, my.
You know? There's so many small things that really add up when you compound the use of energy.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the car and the home both. You have a very quick return on whatever investment you make.
Why didn't we move along then with hydrogen? It could have been more of a reality now. Why are we so late to the game with all of these technologies?
You know, you have to have the will, and you have to have a public that doesn't live in denial.
Hmm.
And we Americans especially are so attached to our creature comforts and so much more optimistic about what can be done that we tend to defer dealing with emergencies.
Mm-hmm.
It's just part of our culture, our optimistic. It's part of what's good about us, too. But when everything has gone so well compared to the rest of the world because of our abundant natural resources, I think we tend, unlike the Europeans, to think that things will last forever.
Mm-hmm.
They, of course, charge two or three times as much for their gasoline because they didn't ever have the massive supply that we had laying under the ground of the United States.
Right.
And so that's why the efficient cars come from there and from Japan, which has very, very little oil resources of its own. And I think somehow we have to shed this idea that resources are unlimited and face up to reality. And, of course, with cars in particular, I think the oil and auto industries are terribly guilty because they have essentially bought off the Congress. For the Congress not to have passed another fuel efficiency measure a long time ago is unconscionable. And when you follow the money, you can see why. I believe the oil companies alone pumped something like $150 million. Is that right? In the 1990s, just in congressional elections.
Hmm.
I figure maybe it's $118 million. But then my point is they spend millions and millions of dollars lobbying against fuel economy.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Detroit guys don't want to spend the money on R&D, and the oil guys want to keep selling oil.
Yeah. What a wacky world. Frank, did you have anything else? Frank is gone. Thanks so much for the call. Let's go to one more phone call. And then we will be speaking with somebody from the National Hydrogen Association. Greg is next from Burnett County. Hi, Greg.
Hello. I'd like to speak to your speaker there about piezoelectrics. If he remembers anything about piezoelectrics, there your quartz digital watch, 98% efficient generators and motors. I don't know why they weren't developed. What happened? If somebody bought them out and they're sitting on the patents or something. Back in the 80s, the science journals were all full of piezoelectrics, and Pepe was in Boston, and they were going to be doing so much with electric cars and stuff, and it just disappeared.
Well, electric car, yeah, I think, you know, the famous, there's a documentary made about how GM pulled out of the market an electric car that it had made. That's a notorious story. I don't know why they did it. But that car was very efficient. I think the problem with electric cars, again, goes back to we Americans. They don't have the range. They're much more efficient than most gas cars. But they don't have the range, and so you can only go 80 or 90 miles with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't, again, suit our comfort zones.
The motor is 98% efficient in a normal electric motor is 30% efficient. A magnetic motor is 30% efficient. To just the efficiency alone.
Well, I think it's more efficient than that, but yes.
Flywheel stores 350 watt-hours per pound, and a battery stores 16. I mean, why don't we develop anything? We're just sitting here.
Yeah, and that's my big complaint against a very short-sighted industry, which has actually cut its own throat now. I don't know. I think it takes political action sometimes to move people. It takes, you know, some education on how things can be improved.
Well,
it's not happening in the level that I would like to see it happen.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
But don't you think it will happen? We've had the major conference of the world scientists, the definitive word on global warming, this sense of urgency that we need to do something.
Building. It's building, and, uh-huh. And you know, I have some hope. Yeah.
Okay.
We need to push the process along much, much, much faster.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Bob, so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Our guest, the first half hour, Bob Shulgin, Bob is environmental advice columnist for Sierra Club magazine. Greg, thank you very much for your call. We're looking at the issue of hydrogen this hour of the program, and is it the answer to what ails the world in terms of gas-guzzling cars and our reliance on oil? Our guest the first half hour, not sure that this is the answer or that it's going to be able to take on the global warming issue as quickly as everybody would like. He said that we need to look at who's benefiting from the research here, and that we also need to look at least in the short term at much more conservation. Joining us the second half hour from the National Hydrogen Association in Washington, D.C., Patrick Surface will be with us. Patrick is Director of Technology and Program Development at this organization, and it's become the area where there's been a great deal of research money put into hydrogen. The president, as I've said, announcing in his State of the Union that there would be $1.2 billion research initiative so that we could look at hydrogen vehicles. And, of course, you've seen the president some of those places where you would refill your hydrogen car, et cetera. So we have a different take on it this half hour, and welcoming more phone calls as well. 800-486-8655-227-2050, 414-227-2050. Hi, Patrick. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. One thing that came out from the reading that I did, and tell me if we can look to hydrogen cars earlier than this, is that hydrogen might be good for us, but we're not looking at anything until at least 2030.
Well, I think there are going to be different things that happen in different stages. There are hydrogen products that are out there today, mostly providing stationary power, and also even units that are handheld or portable, like for professional video cameras.
Ah.
And those products will continue to roll out. I can talk more about those. But as you're talking about vehicles, most of the auto manufacturers are planning to have their first production vehicles out sometime probably around 2015 to 2020. And knowing how the car manufacturers operate, that can vary widely. In terms of when they'll come out. There are a bunch of vehicles. There are hundreds of vehicles in the U.S. today already. But in terms of when they'll actually be in the showroom, it'll probably be around 2015 to 2020.
Mm-hmm. What about the whole infrastructure that surrounds this? You'd need fueling stations all over. Isn't it phenomenally expensive, Patrick?
Well, I think we need to put this all in perspective a little bit, because you don't necessarily need to build a totally new fueling station. If you look at the hydrogen station that's right in Washington, D.C. at Benning Road, what they did is they took an existing gasoline station, and although they did new construction to the building to make sure that it would all look nice, what they essentially did was they added a hydrogen pump to an existing gasoline station. So you put extra equipment in there, but then that allows you to have the choice between gasoline and hydrogen. And I think as we look to hydrogen and even other alternative fuels, you'll see biodiesel and ethanol and other things that are also available at fueling stations. I think you're going to start to see that the way you see fueling stations today are they're not just going to be gasoline and diesel, that you're going to have other options there as well, and hydrogen would be implemented just the same way.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that it is the most promising of the alternatives to oil, hydrogen?
Well, long term, yes. Hydrogen is one of the only fuels that could radically reduce greenhouse gases, air pollutants, and oil use. But is it a silver bullet? No. I want to be very clear that we don't really think that hydrogen will be the only thing that we'll use. I think that we'll use a mix of fuels, we'll use a mix of our energy resources, and it's that diversity really that is the most important thing, so that we're not just dependent on our energy coming from one place. But in terms of transportation and providing a fuel that allows you to get the same performance that you do out of your vehicles and also remove the automobile from the environmental debate, I think hydrogen right now does provide the best option.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not the best option for the next 3 years, real near term, next 3 to 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
But as you start looking down the road, it absolutely does provide the best option as all the technologies come into place. And that's why so many people are so interested in making sure that the research happens now, that the development happens now, so that 10 years down the road, we have that option. If we don't do it now, we aren't going to have those options down the road when we really need them.
Why the heck didn't we do it a long time ago?
Well, we've been working on hydrogen for quite some time. Hydrogen has been around forever. The U.S. uses 10 million tons of it every year. Just talking about the infrastructure and delivery, I was listening to Bob's segment earlier, and although I agree with some things that he says, I think what was failed to be pointed out was the fact that there are a lot of deliveries and there is a lot of infrastructure that is already in place. For example, over 12,000 deliveries of hydrogen are already made a year, and so there is an infrastructure there that we can build on for hydrogen use.
What about pipelines, et cetera? He talked about how incredibly expensive, $1 million a mile, I think, was the figure he cited.
Yeah, and that figure's about right, but that's taken out of context with how much it would cost to put in pipelines in general for natural gas and other pipelines, which are also very, very expensive. There are currently about 700 miles of hydrogen pipelines in the country right now, it would be a large capital cost, but if you have the hydrogen need, you would only put a pipeline in the ground if you had a very large need for hydrogen.
Mm-hmm.
If you were in a small town and you only need to service maybe a couple fueling stations and maybe some homes or something like that, you might not have a pipeline. Instead, you would have the distributed production of hydrogen, like maybe using electrolysis that one of the first callers was talking about. So you have different options, and that's one of the great benefits. Again, it's the diversity, it's the options and the different ways that you can use hydrogen. But for pipelines, if you had a really large need, like in a metropolitan area, although the capital cost is high, it then becomes extremely cheap to move the hydrogen around, way cheaper than it would be to deliver it. And therefore, you know, hydrogen will likely be cost competitive with gasoline when it's dispensed in a consumer market. And at pipeline locations, it has the possibility to be cheaper.
Hmm. We have a lot of people who want to speak with you, so we'll go right back to phone calls. Patrick Surface is our guest this half hour. He's Director of Technology and Program Development at the National Hydrogen Association in Washington, D.C. 800-486-8655 is our number. We go to Mike from West Dallas next, and thanks for waiting. Mike, hi.
Good morning, Kathleen. Good morning to your guests. I really want to reiterate what the former guest initiated, the conservation is the key to our short-term success. And from a hydrogen standpoint, I always find it kind of interesting because it is, in my estimation, a silver bullet solution that may or may not happen. We had a lot of excitement back in the 70s on an engine design, which was called the Wankel engine, which everybody thought was going to be the future savior of engines, and it ended up not succeeding. Mazda spent a lot of money in Wankels, and it just didn't cut it. But with hydrogen, the big problem with hydrogen is that you have, and I converted a lawnmower engine over to run on hydrogen.
Oh, really?
I've experimented with this a few years ago. You have something that's a very, very, it's not a dense gas. It's a very undense gas, and you have to spend lots of energy to compress it into a form that you can transport through a pipeline or a tank. So you're spending energy to compress hydrogen maybe to 3,000 pounds PSI, and gasoline has much more density because it's a liquid. What I see the role of hydrogen playing is not as the 100% silver bullet solution, but as an additive to existing fuels. For example, propane, which is a gas, there is something called hyzine, which is actually a combination of propane and hydrogen, that actually enriches the propane to a point where it actually has some value. So I'd love to see hydrogen step into the incremental portion of 1%, 5%, 10%, rather than this complete conversion over to something that is very technically and very energy intensive.
Hmm. Tell me, what you gotta love this audience. I love callers like this. Mike, what possessed you to change your lawnmower to hydrogen?
I attended some hydrogen seminars out in Colorado State University, and one of the professors actually brought in an engine into the hotel and started it in the auditorium.
Oh my gosh!
None of us knew what to expect, but this engine was actually puffing out hot moist air, and no pollutants at all. Maybe some nitrogen oxide because that's in the air. But it was such a fascinating experiment that I decided to convert it. It's actually not complicated. Anybody who converts an engine to propane can convert an engine to hydrogen as well.
Huh. What do you say, Patrick?
Well, I would like to say, Mike, that we do really feel that using hydrogen like you're talking about, where it's mixed with other gases and things like that, is something that is beneficial, especially in the near term. You know, like I said before, I really actually disagree with you that there isn't there's not a silver bullet here, and I don't think anyone in the hydrogen industry or fuel cell industry is looking to hydrogen as a silver bullet. But it is a very, very significant beneficial option that we definitely need to get more into our energy mix, because it has a lot of opportunities to provide clean energy for us, you know, now and down the road. The reason why we're not looking at mixtures really as the long-term solution, mixtures of hydrogen with other gases, is because although you do get an energy efficiency increase of about 30% when you use hydrogen in an engine like the lawnmower that Mike's talking about, and that is beneficial, and the exhaust, as he says, is virtually just water vapor with a few nitrogen oxides because of the nitrogen that exists in the air, the exhaust is very, very clean. However, when you use it in a fuel cell, which is in a combustion-free process that produces electricity, you're going to get 2 to 3 times better efficiency.
Hmm.
And it's that much increased efficiency that, although it does take energy to compress the hydrogen and to make it, it takes energy to make any of the fuels that we use today. And that much of that efficiency gain you get it right back when you actually use it, especially in a fuel cell, which has very, very high efficiency.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mike, so much for your call. We're going to welcome more of them in a moment. We're speaking this half hour with Patrick Surfis. He's Director of Technology and Program Development at the National Hydrogen Association in Washington. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 227-2050 in Milwaukee. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow during this time period, Christopher Phillips will be with us. Christopher's a wonderful guy. He's an educator, author, and founder of the Nonprofit Society for Philosophical Inquiry. He travels all over the world talking philosophy with people from all walks of life, and he has started the Socrates Cafes all over the world as well. His latest book is Socrates in Love, Philosophy for a Passionate Heart. So let's go back to phone calls. John from Appleton, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I agree with very much of what your guest says, but I think that most of the discussion is avoiding the elephant in the room, which is the simple fact that automobiles are not an efficient way to transport people. You might be able to save some, you know, fossil carbon emissions by converting to hydrogen, especially if we can use something like hydro to create it, but you still have to create and maintain this huge and expensive automobile culture infrastructure of highways and roads designed for peak traffic flows, parking, all that kind of thing. And if you used your hydrogen in, say, public transportation, you could get a much greater efficiency and not have to maintain this huge infrastructure. I guess that's my point. I'd like to hear what your guest thinks about that.
John, I couldn't agree with you more. I think that public transportation is definitely very very beneficial, and we do need an added emphasis on it. Just like as other callers and as Bob was explaining in the first half hour here, that energy efficiency is really key. I think you're right, and let's not lose sight of those very important elements. In fact, public transportation is probably one of the best ways to help roll out hydrogen technologies, especially when it relates to transportation, because with most public transportation fleets, you know, like if you have a bus, or even if you talk about other fleets like FedEx trucks or your mail delivery trucks or even the parking enforcement and any other fleets that you have in a city, all of those vehicles are generally going to return to about the same place every night, and therefore you can very easily put in a hydrogen infrastructure there with just one, maybe two fueling stations, because all the vehicles will use the same one. And then you have buses running around that are emitting no emissions. And how nice would it be to be a pedestrian on the street and walk by a bus and not have to hold your breath while that cloud of diesel smoke goes over you?
Mm-hmm.
Some of the hydrogen buses are already being used in the San Francisco Bay Area with AC Transit, and more are being developed by Ford and others right now.
Mm-hmm. Is hydrogen dangerous?
Well, we like to say that hydrogen is no more dangerous or no more safe than gasoline. It is
uh-huh.
flammable.
Yeah.
But so is gasoline, and it just has to be handled with care. For example, you wouldn't go spraying around gasoline out of your nozzle in the fueling station while smoking a cigarette. or anything else like that. And hydrogen just needs to be handled responsibly. It does have a lot of elements to it that are very beneficial to safety. And I think this was brought up before, how hydrogen is a very, I think the words were undense gas. Well, hydrogen is very light. In fact, it's twice as light as helium. So if there ever were to be a leak, and remember, most hydrogen systems, or all hydrogen systems, are designed to be closed systems,
mm-hmm.
not like gasoline, where you're actually pouring the hydrogen into your vehicle. With a hydrogen dispenser, you would actually attach the dispenser to your vehicle, so it's airtight.
Mm-hmm.
So there isn't really the same potential for leaks and that sort of thing. But if you were to have one, the hydrogen would dissipate up and away from any ignition sources, instead of pooling on the ground like gasoline or propane would. So, you know, it's important to know that it is a flammable gas.
Right.
But, you know, it will be handled very safely, if not more safely than we handle gasoline mm-hmm. and other fuels.
Thanks, John, for your call. Let's go next to Daryl from Madison. Hi, Daryl.
Hi, how are you this morning?
Fine, you.
Thank you. Say, my one question is basically, how is a vehicle like this that may be developed in, say, 2015, 2020, looking at the way vehicles are today, especially Toyota's, the Highlander, the new Camry, and the Prius, all those are somewhat unattainable to people with the price. When it does become available, how much are we talking as far as operator costs, what a car would cost to a consumer? Because I think that's what Americans are going to want. They're going to want their car just like their habits. Any light on that?
Sure. When you talk about the actual price of the vehicle, you know, I think all auto manufacturers would hope that their consumers would pay $10,000 or $20,000 more for a vehicle if it was perfectly clean. And some of us would. We would pay more for a vehicle that was perfectly clean, but most people won't. And so what that means is that when these vehicles actually roll out, very similar to the hybrids that you see today, they'll be pretty comparable to the vehicles that are out there today in terms of price for the actual sticker price of a vehicle. So expect comparable prices for the vehicles. On the fuel side, like I said before, when we're talking about fuel cell vehicles, they're about 2 to 3 times more efficient. And so what that means is that, you know, although you could pay, $5 a gallon gasoline equivalent for the hydrogen, you're going to be using much less of it to get down the road. And so, therefore, when you're actually paying at the pump for the hydrogen, the cost per mile is also going to be comparable. But in some cases, it might actually be cheaper. It's just a little bit too far ahead to say right now. You can drive the vehicles today if you're interested. We actually have a conference in San Antonio, and on March 21st in San Antonio, we're going to have a ride and drive available. So I know it's kind of far away from most of the folks within listening range on this call, but do know that there are opportunities to go out and drive these vehicles today and get familiar with them.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to that day when I can afford and drive a hydrogen vehicle. I think it's the future, and I think you guys are doing a great job. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Thanks, Gerald. Thanks for your call. We go next to Rick from Milwaukee. Hi, Rick.
Hello. I just wanted to say, to me, I find it surprising that no one has pointed out the relationship between a society that is based on corporate profits and our inability to plan ahead or think ahead. If it's not in the interest of these corporations that make cars or produce other things, they're not going to do it. It's not a surprise that they're, you know, producing SUVs, as was mentioned maybe 15 minutes ago, instead of, you know, the more efficient things, if that's where the money is, the greatest profits are. As a system, our economic system seems to be incapable of planning ahead, thinking ahead. And discussions like we're having now, which are based on how would we have better society, how would we advance the human race together, planet together, are completely alien to the whole thinking of capitalism. And if anyone's unclear of that point, I'd like to recommend the film The Corporation, which came out a few years ago. I'm calling from Milwaukee. It's available from the Milwaukee County Federated Library System, and I'm sure you can buy it. I know you can buy it online. It's called The Corporation.
Thanks very much for your call, Rick. Patrick?
I'm not quite sure how to respond to that. I can just say that I think the auto manufacturers will make the vehicles that consumers want to buy. And so if you as a consumer can help show the auto manufacturers that you want a clean vehicle, that you don't want the very, very large SUVs and things like that, I think that they'll respond to that demand by making the vehicles that you want.
Yeah. Thanks, Rick, for your call. We got Ed from Wausau next. Hello, Ed.
Hi. I remember from the 70s era when we were, with the gas lines and stuff like that, I saw in a popular science magazine, and they were talking about fuel cells, as you mentioned, but they were talking about it being used in a heating plant, like for a home, which would actually produce electricity. And I was wondering what if that technology is being explored. And also, one other thing, I saw, I think it was a University of California professor, an older fellow, had converted a Prius to run on hydrogen. He was using some type of hydrogen pellets. But that is, I was just wondering if you heard of either one of those two.
Sure. Well, what you're talking about in terms of using heat from a fuel cell, there are lots of different kinds of fuel cells. Some of the callers before were talking about solid oxide fuel cells, which are fuel cells that can use all kinds of different fuels. And within the fuel cells, you actually break down that fuel into the hydrogen part, and then you use the hydrogen to produce electricity and a lot of heat. And you can use that heat for all kinds of uses, obviously, and you're encouraged to do so. The kinds of fuel cells that are in hydrogen vehicles are a different kind of fuel cell called a PEM fuel cell, for proton exchange membrane. And in the simplest way, it takes oxygen from the air, and it takes hydrogen from a storage tank and combines it together to make electricity. And out the other end, you get electricity, pure water, and a little bit of heat, much less heat than you do with the solid oxide and other molten carbonate fuel cells, which actually are in use today. For example, they're running the police station in Central Park, which is off grid.
Oh, really?
So those cogen units where you use the heat are definitely very much encouraged. As far as the Prius goes, you can, just like I think Mike before was talking about converting his lawnmower to use hydrogen.
Yes.
You could do the same thing with any hydrogen engine, with any engine, just like you would have in a Prius. And the conversion is relatively simple. We as an association, the National Hydrogen Association, don't like to encourage that because, just like we talked before about safety, you want to make sure that you understand the properties
sure do.
Of hydrogen
right.
first. But it is, technically speaking, a fairly simple conversion process, and you can do that. And there are actually dozens of Priuses running on hydrogen with the South Coast Air Quality Management District in California right now. You talked about pellets, and it's good that you brought that up because it allows us to say a little bit about storage. You can store hydrogen basically three different ways. One is to compress it, which we talked about before. Normally, it's compressed about 5,000, or now they're even talking about 10,000 psi. Your normal natural gas tanks, like you use for propane or for your grill and stuff like that, are probably closer to 3,000 psi. And you can liquefy it, which would be very, very cold. It would be in a liquid form. When the hydrogen is actually used, it would be in a gaseous form. It would warm up. But you can store it in a tank as a very, very well-insulated liquid. And then the pellets, as you're talking about, is the third way. And there are lots of different variations on that. But basically, you take different compounds. Some of them look like a metallic powder. Some of them kind of look like rabbit food, like pellets. And what they are is they're different chemical compounds that actually absorb the gaseous hydrogen just like a sponge. And they can store a lot of hydrogen in that small space. It's pretty amazing. Those are called hydrides. So you have compressed storage, liquid storage, and hydride storage, which are like those pellets. And right now researchers and people in the field are working with all three techniques too, because different storage techniques are better in different situations.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Ed, so much for the call. We have time for one more phone call. Mike from Milwaukee. Hi.
Yes, hello. I love your show here. I just had a question. I heard you say about that some of the buses in San Francisco are running on hydrogen right now. And if this is possible, why can't we convert regular cars on a larger scale to hydrogen, for the near future before 2015?
Well, you could. The hydrogen buses are made from scratch just for hydrogen. Converting a vehicle is a little bit different. And I think the reason that you don't see a lot of people pushing for that is because we're looking long term. Switching over a few dozen vehicles here and there to run on hydrogen would be good because then they wouldn't be running on gasoline. But really what we're looking for just in the next couple of years is to have hundreds and thousands of hydrogen vehicles coming on the roads. And with that, you really need to look at hydrogen production, not conversion. In the end, it'll be more efficient.
Mm-hmm. Patrick, thanks so much for being with us. It was a very interesting hour. Thanks.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Patrick Surfis, and Patrick is with the National Hydrogen Association. He is the Director of Technology and Program Development, and you can Google Hydrogen Association to find out more information. Our first guest from the Sierra Club, and that's sierraclub.org. So thanks to Susie Seidelman for producing this hour, to John Treader for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. Copies of this hour, call the radio store at 800-747-7444. The program number is 213E, 213E. This show repeats at 10 o'clock tonight if you want to tell somebody to listen to this show on hydrogen cars. Tomorrow, it's Valentine's Day. Our guest during this time period, Christopher Phillips, whose latest book is Socrates in Love, Philosophy for a Passionate Heart. So tune in. We'll celebrate Valentine's Day together. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.